To the parents of Associate Professor of Computer Science and Software Engineering Farah Kinder, please change your password.
Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see.
It looks something like this.
Oh.
1.21 gigawatts.
What the hell is a gigawatt?
You're listening to the Hashtag Getting Podcast, brought to you by Auburn University's Samuel Ginn College of Engineering.
Today is your lucky day, listener, because you are tuning in. Well, you know what you're tuning into. The best podcast in all of higher education. That's the award-winning Hashtag Getting, brought to you by the incredible Samuel Ginn College of Engineering's Office of Communications and Marketing. I serve that place. I work there is what I do. Communications and Marketing Specialist is the game. And Jeremy Henderson is my name. Austin Phillips is my co-host over here, co-host with the co-most. The comb most too. I gotta say that ridge is looking mighty nice.
Rabbit Ridge is
that's
up.
It's
because I was fortunate enough because of Mr. Waltos to be able to sit in one of the suites that engineering does for the Iron Bowl. And they have little travel size hairsprays. So I made sure it was the last game. So I took the Tresemme with me so I can keep his
thing. Tresemme.
My Tresemme. Kim gave me the Tresemme, so it's high
and tight. Hey, we got Jackson over here, young man, only 2 weeks left with us.
Did we get rid of John finally?
John was fired.
Okay, good. It's about time. Let's hire TA and see what
Camille,
happens.
Camille Lawler was just She
broke him. That
he didn't
was
do
it.
The spiel. She was tapping everything. It was all. Did you hear the cord tapping on that? I apologize. That was on me.
There's going to be some heavy editing.
Editing. Today, I'm very excited because, you know, a lot of people just do the computing and the software engineering. But our guest today, you add the Q in front of it. Quantum computing.
That's the little stuff.
We have Farah Kinder. No, Kinder. Kinder. No. I had it. I lost it. My memory's getting. I'm 44 now. I'm getting the memories going down a little bit.
I want to hear him pronounce it.
Go for it.
Farah Kinder.
There you go.
Farah Kinder.
That's how you say
okay.
It.
An associate.
Yes, sir.
Yes, associate. Professor in CSSE, Computer Science and Software Engineering.
That's what the kids call it.
Which is pretty, it's a big one now.
It is the biggest.
The biggest. Did you know that? It's the biggest department.
Largest
in terms
department
of
in the college.
Nice.
If we count in all of our online students.
Yeah.
You know, mechanical has been the largest for probably 100 years.
Anyone who uses a lab, if we count them when they log in, I'm just joking. Yeah. No, apparently it's the largest.
It is.
Now.
It's now our largest.
How about
department.
That? Which is a testament to where we are in life.
Yes, and I mean, it makes sense. I mean,
these computer things apparently are sticking around.
Yes, these phones are going to make it.
So, thank you for taking the time and joining us. So, I don't know. I kind of want to just instantly launch into the research and everything you're doing. But
do what you got to do,
Jer. Let's backstory.
This is your show, and we're just
you're
part
for
of
the
it.
Ride. Buckle up, bro.
Yeah, here we go.
Well, let's backstory it first. Okay, how long have you been at Auburn?
So, thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. Welcome.
I joined Auburn a year and a couple months.
Okay.
So last year.
Okay.
And moved from University of Tennessee Chattanooga. Ah, lived there for a while. And then we decide just like, hey, let's go adventure.
Rock and roll. Mm-hmm. So what, any regrets? I mean, we liking it?
Just so far, so awesome, I guess.
We call it the greatest year of his life.
Yes. Yeah. It's just continually.
Yes.
Just I'll second that.
When we say upward trajectory, that's what we mean.
Yeah. Well, so backstory wise, so you were at UTC. Where were you before that?
I was in Jordan.
Okay.
Came from Jordan to North Dakota.
Similar.
And that was a shock.
Similar. I was about to say, that's a little different. That's a little different.
Yeah, finished my PhD up there. Then I decided, like, I'm done with the cold, so let's go get some warm weather. So I head down to Tennessee. We liked it. And then it was like, oh, we will go more south.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Going down.
Yeah, just stop here.
Though. Yeah.
Florida's not all it's built up to be.
That's too hot.
Yes.
Well, engineering. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with your life. Well, what got you involved with engineering and then the computer side of things?
Yeah, how did that interest start?
I think computer science is the silver key for everything, and you need computers, you need networks. And when I start looking into technology, I was like, this kid wants to build computers, like all the kids now just want to build computers, buy pieces, put them together. And it's like, oh, it turned on, and like trying to figure out the password that my parents tried to put on the computer.
What was
like,
it? He remembers. I can tell.
It was KLM, actually.
KLM?
The airline, KLM.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was the password.
Okay.
That was it?
Back in the days, it wasn't a big deal to have a very long password. Just like make it simple, man.
KLM. Delta.
Yeah, but now it's...
Okay.
It's a different beast. So I started looking into... shifted from the computer, building computers, to like, oh, network is fascinating. Because back in the day, you have to buy a card to connect to the internet. And it's like, once you get the card, you start hearing those buzz sounds. And then you get like a... 54 kilobit per second, and like you open the page and it takes like forever to download. That was depressing at the time. Then it's like, oh, what's wrong with those systems? And they start looking into networks, and that's what got me into computer networks.
Rock
and that's where I started.
How old are you
now?
Mm-hmm.
42.
Okay. What was your first computer?
It was Pentium 1.
Okay.
At the time.
Video games?
Of course.
What was your first video game system?
Sakhar? I don't know if that's the name for it here. But it's like...
It's Nintendo. It's pronounced Nintendo.
No. Oh, Nintendo is like... You're talking about... I'm referencing the one with the cassette. You get like a cassette and you put it in the machine.
Whoa.
And played it. And the cassette will basically translate all this data into the computer, and then the computer actually plays it. So there's a preparation before you actually play the game. So it's like not like I want to play the game, you plug it in and you start right away. No, there's like you put it in there, let it like read the cassette, and that's probably 30 minutes.
Well,
so like
Google
by the time it's done,
I'm gonna have to look that up.
By the time it's done, it's like I don't want to play anymore.
Right.
Because I waited for too long.
Man, oh man.
Yeah.
Well, so we've leapt into the quantum before. We've had some leaps.
Yep, Ziggy.
I
said, yep, Ziggy.
Ziggy, right. Yeah. Did you get that show growing up, Quantum Leap?
No.
There was a show called Quantum Leap.
Oh, I have to
It dealt with... it probably is not really accurate with a lot of the stuff, time travel. You haven't gotten to the time travel stuff yet.
Yeah.
But I've been fascinated. We had, even one of our... tribologist, a mechanical engineer, wrote a book about quantum, kind of a fiction, about quantum entanglement and all these, these concepts, and quantum computing seems like it's a big deal right now. And, one of the things, and you just got a grant. My gosh, NSF.
The biggie.
Buried the lead a little bit. 116,000 NSF grant. Again, furthering our what's the actual title of the project?
EQUIS. So the idea behind that is, now we're backstory. It's back in the day when you want to buy a computer, it costs you like a couple thousand dollars, just like the most stupid computer.
Sure.
But now everything got cheaper before the COVID and shortage. But like, you got to a point that you can get a decent computer for like a couple thousand, and this computer actually can do things. Like, can you crunch data? Can you do analysis? You can train your models on a couple thousand dollars computer. It's not going to be a supercomputer. I'm not talking about supercomputers yet, but the prices went down on those materials. And now, with that in mind, the $100,000 back in the day could buy you like a decent supercomputer, but now you can get like an actual supercomputer. With those prices went down, people start thinking like, oh, we can buy more equipment, we can buy this and that. And now they're bringing quantum phenomena into the mix. So the idea behind quantum is like, we're not talking about bits as zero and one. We're talking about qubits. The qubits has different states. Like, if you look into the binary system, you have a zero and one state. So you can either be a zero at one time and one at another time. But quantum, you actually can be at the same on multiple states at the same time. And that's what makes things interesting. And with those computers built on qubits, they can actually do more calculation at an instance faster than the others. Because when you look at regular computers, you have to pick a state and do one calculation at a time. But with the qubits, I can do multiple calculations at the same time and figure things faster. And that's where things start getting crazy. Because with encryption, you're trying to guess random numbers. And that guesses in the regular computer, you have to guess one at a time. But with quantum, I can just do multiple runs at the same time and have different state, have different numbers, and I can do the guessing faster. This is the simplest version of everything. But with this technology advancing, we have a shortage of people knowing what quantum computing is. Like, hey, we're getting those electric vehicle in the mix. It's like, oh, we don't know how to fix it. But like, they're going to be on the street tomorrow, or they're currently on the street. But like, oh, what if something goes wrong? Oh, you have to go to the dealership. It's like, no, we're going to train people to actually know how to fix things. And that's the idea of the quantum initiative. Is like, hey, we have this technology, but we need people to actually know how to use it. Because with this advancement, we need to get people to actually program on it, know how to use it. If you go to Google and Amazon, and they have those quantum computing that you can use it, but there's no people know how to use it. And that's the idea behind the project, is like, hey, how can we bring a cohort of students, teaching them this, give them hands-on experience, so they have some knowledge as they go into the field.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah. Well, if I was working on this, I would probably call it like creating and sustaining a diverse community of expertise in quantum information science across the Southeastern United States.
Does that sound good?
That would sound like a great name.
That's very catchy.
Yeah.
We'll
I like it.
Reach out to the NSF and just pitch that and see. See the bike.
Well, here's the thing: is I understood that.
I kind of did too.
I know. I started off. I'm like, oh, here we go.
Where do I sign up?
You're
going to
be on my next cohort. Proposal.
Yeah.
Cool. Somebody, I have my copy eyes.
I'm sure if I lived in the Midwest, I wouldn't have got it.
That but is going to be my goal. I want to be a co-PI on a project.
Hey, here we go.
You're a co-P something.
You owe me, Zabala. You know, we talk about the speed. Obviously, being one of the next level speed of quantum computing and everything. I mean, my thing's pretty fast. I mean, I'm listening to Spotify. I'm listening to, you know, I'm writing on the internet. I mean, how much faster can we get?
I mean, yeah. I mean, how much quicker can Jeremy get a Jimmy Buffett post out?
Sure.
You know, passing.
The Chick-fil-A app, I mean, it's pretty fast. I mean, use that faster,
The
actually.
Service isn't as moving as
quick. Yeah, can we do, like, quantum chicken? Because that would be good.
Oh, that would be interesting.
If we could take that up a notch.
You get full before you eat.
Yeah.
It's like,
Is it that level of like you, I mean, we're joking around, obviously, but I mean, the factors of speed and I guess just technical agility, let's say, with quantum computing, I mean, is it that much of a game changer if it's implemented, you know, across the board?
So what interests us in quantum is the cybersecurity component. So my background is cybersecurity.
Sure.
So I do a lot of cyber stuff.
Networking.
And
makes sense.
When it comes to, for example, encryption, the idea again behind encryption is like, hey, there is a key that shared somehow, and people try to figure out the key, similar to what I did with my computer. There is a password. I'm trying to crack the password to go in. And the idea behind that, to do the decryption, is either you know the key or you figure out the key. Figure out the key because the structure of the key is designed in a way that's become harder. With the regular systems, you have to do one at a time, one calculation at a time. That takes forever, millions of years, if you're talking about long numbers. Now, with quantum, that becomes faster. That million years become maybe 100,000 years because we can do the calculation. We're not there yet to crack those password in fast amount, but in comparison, when you talk about million years to 100,000 years, that's a big leap.
Yeah.
And the idea behind the quantum initiative is like, hey, how can we be prepared before things happen? Because when quantum computer become deployed more and more, the encryption become problematic because like, oh, you can put whatever password you have, people can crack it. And
I wonder if the new thing will be really simple passwords. And so it's kind of like, you know, they're expecting just these long things and you're just KLMing them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mine's going to be TWA.
Right. Jeremy Henderson.
Well, you've also, you're also involved working with the Ethical Hacking Club.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about how you got involved with them. And then they had a recent competition, a national competition.
So I'm new to this game. So the students came looking for a mentor, and I work in cybersecurity again. I have some background in there. So the idea behind that is to, for them building the team and go and compete, and us as mentors, faculty, Daniel Torres was there, Drew Springle was there before. So I just took the responsibility for the mentorship. And the idea behind that is like we take all the logistics off their hands. We help them if they need like, hey, technical stuff. And the idea behind that specific competition that the student went into is they get six students will be sitting in a room, not in a room, on a table basically, but there's a bunch of schools doing the same thing. And the idea of like they throw system at them and they have clients trying to get service from those system. There are red teams trying to attack the system, and they are the CEOs of this company, and they're trying to answer and address. So the students are put on a real-time kind of situation. It's like they're under attack for 6 hours or 8 hours and trying to defend that system. And that was very exciting and very interesting. And this is our first time getting into this competition. When I went there, there's schools, this is like the seventh, eighth time in this system, in this kind of stuff. And they have like team A and team B, and sure. And there's like coaches that graduated being a team member. Now he's a coach, and it's a whole different system.
Right.
But the whole setup, it's very interesting as getting everything, the tools that we teach the students in different courses that we, like I teach digital forensics. So we teach students how to like, hey, pull data from a disk and try to analyze it and see like, was there any deleted files? Was there any added files? Website was visited, things like that. And we teach them things separate. And I think with that competition, the exciting thing was seeing the student putting all this knowledge into one place, trying to actually defend the system.
It's like that scene in Karate Kid, you know, when he showed me sand the floor, wax on, wax off, but then he throws all of them at him, and Daniel just instantly responds. That's training. That's education.
On the spot. And where was this competition?
It was in Chicago.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. You know, this group, I mean, they've been doing these cool things for a while. What I'm really looking forward to is when we introduce the Auburn Unethical Hacking Club.
Yes,
unethical
hacking.
Now, that's where it's going to get really good.
Yeah. Now, I've been kind of
You've been dabbling in unethical hacking
for a little while. obviously, Farah over here was back in Jordan.
Yeah.
Old KLM himself. Did you get busted? Did you guess it, or did you ever with the parents?
Yeah, I told him.
You told him,
hey,
you found
I had the password.
You might want to change the password, Mom.
Well, were you just guessing for KLM?
Yeah, because the systems are not.
But I mean, like, but it's the airlines. I mean, were they just really into planes or something? Like,
I don't know. But it was popular back in the days.
Okay. Well, all right.
That's one of the planes actually used to come to Jordan. That's one of the routes.
Right. Okay. I gotcha. Well, I know there's a ton more. I mean, we have any more? Well, you got the NSF,
yeah,
you know, project.
You
that's
stuff.
A big deal. You have more stuff?
Yeah. Another project we're working on is trust management. That's one of our babies that we've been working on for the past 2 years. And the idea behind that is like you see all these IoT devices around you. You go collect data and you take the data and you start making decisions based on data. But the problem is that is how do you trust those devices? The data that they gave you, it could be tampered with, it could be fabricated data, but like you look at it, it's like, oh, it looks real, and you just like take it and make weather predictions or like transportation prediction and all this kind of stuff. So our work is, how can I evaluate the trust? How can I vet those devices and figure out which device of these is like just telling lies based on behavioral, based on interactions? So that's kind of the project we're working on.
What's an example of a behavior that's a red flag?
You're looking at, for example, if you have a thermostats in your manufacturer or something like that, and one sensor is giving you reading of like it's 70 degrees, but like your system doesn't work on that level, so you have to shut down the system. So that's how those devices could inject bad data into your system, and when you analyze it, you figure out like, oh, I have to stop production because my sensors are reading this temperature. And any of these behavior could have a long impact on your system. And another application for that is transportation. Now you have vehicles basically talk to infrastructure, talk to each other. Talk is just figurative speech.
Sure.
The transmission of like between messages and like, hey, there's a crash, there's a something on the road and all this kind of stuff. So how do you trust that? And that's where we're trying to actually profile the devices, see how they actually react to things. Why did they react it this way at that point in time and things like that. So we build a normal behavior of those devices. And later in the day, we keep monitoring the devices. And if we see like a hiccup in those responses, we say like, something wrong in that device. So probably we give it like a yellow card. It's like, hey, we're our eyes are on you. And then if something bad happened later on, it's like, I think this device has to be out.
Red card.
Yeah.
Well, can you look at the scoreboard from the stadium? Because after Saturday night, I swear the numbers were wrong at the end of the game. But
I don't trust it.
I don't trust it either.
I have no confidence in that score.
We need to yellow card that thing.
Yeah. I think we have to look at the clock at that day.
Yeah. I absolutely. Yeah.
Those 40
so.
Seconds,
Man,
they did not.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Didn't we have one of,
yeah,
wait,
Matthew
one of our.
Is Matthew Garnett?
Matthew?
Is it Matthew? Are we blaming Matthew for
Golly,
this?
Golly, seriously. What the? Gee.
Well, this
guy.
Was interesting today.
Yeah, no, yeah, seriously. I love awesome. This is because yep. This is future. I mean, everything we do is obviously
well,
looking forward.
I love when our faculty members can break it down for idiots mm-hmm. like us.
Oh, yeah.
Because if we can understand it, then there's hope for a lot
Idiot
of people.
Idiot-proof podcast. Yes. I love it. Yeah. And calling it the silver key.
That's
I
what
mean,
when he said IoT, he meant idiot of things.
Idiot.
Oh, my God. So, yeah.
Well, it's KLM. That's the title.
That's it. Hey, the password. My password's getting changed right
yeah,
now.
You may want to call the folks and just tell
don't,
them. To
don't tell Shannon.
Add an exclamation
yeah.
point or something.
Don't tell Shannon.
Yeah, anyway, Farrah, can't thank you enough for joining us. And yeah, this has been great. Thanks so much for what you're doing.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, War Eagle.
You're listening to the #Getting podcast, brought to you by Auburn University's Samuel Ginn College of Engineering.